Okay. Today we're going to start and finish a new topic because it's relevant for Pesach. We're going to go off of our requirements of being from in the workplace, and we're going to talk a little in Yana Diyoma relating to Pesach. So a question for the group is, if you have a good amount of chametz coming to Pesach, what do you do with it? Right? There's an Isser of Bal Yerah and Bal Yematzah. You can't be in ownership of chametz worldwide. The Isser of Bal Yerah and Bal Yematzah is very much like the U.S. taxation system, that wherever you earn money, you're taxed. So Bal Yerah and Bal Yematzah, you have an Isser of owning chametz wherever it is in the world. So what do you do with it coming to Pesach? What are the options?
Sell it.
Sell it. To who?
Well,
to Goy. So if I have any chametz, I can just go and find a Goy. It's not that easy in Ma'alot Dafna, but I can search for a Goy and sell him my chametz.
It has to be a real contract.
So it needs to be a real sale. So can I go to everyone? Anyone ever done that? Go to a non-Jew and say, or have your Rav go to a non-Jew and say, you know, I've got a bottle of Blue Label, it's a $300 bottle, and I don't want to pour it down the sink in preparation for Pesach, so I'd like to sell it. Who sold chametz before? Does that sound right to you, to sell chametz? Yeah? You're not allowed to own it, so what do? You sell it, and then you don't own it with a tanai? Without a Tanai, what's a Tanai? A condition. So I can go to what's going to be the name of our non-Jew for today. Peter. Oh, we're in Israel. Mahmoud. So no, we'll go with Peter. Oh, anyone named Peter here? Okay, we'll use Peter. Typically Peter or Chris, but so Peter. We're going to go to Peter. I'm going to say, Peter, I'd like to sell you my chametz. And what's Peter going to say?
Sure.
How much chametz, and how much do I have to pay? Right, you're going to give me a deal, and what are you going to do with it after Pesach? You're going to tell him, you know, you can have it for 7 days, 8 days, and I'm going to meet you 3 minutes after Passover ends and repurchase it from you? Can I tell that to him? Does he have a right to use it?
Yeah.
He does. So where do we keep it? Do we deliver it to his house? Does he come pick it up from us?
No.
What happens with that? Chametz.
You
what?
You keep it in your drawer.
You keep it in your drawer? Is that a real sale?
It has to be available to him.
It has to be available to him. So if you live in Los Angeles and you travel to Israel for Pesach, you have to leave the key with somebody or with the goy? Anyone had that issue before? I've had that issue before. You go to New York. Do you take the key with you, or do you leave it with the Rav who sold your chametz, or with the non-Jew? What do you do? So this is our shayl is mechiras chametz. So if we look at the beginning here, source number one, the Tosefta, where it's underlined, says as follows: B'Tosefta Psachim Yisrael v'Nochri Shayu Bayin B'Sfina v'Chametz B'Yad Yisrael. So there's a Jew and a non-Jew. They're traveling on a boat, and the Jew has chametz, and he starts to panic. He says, "I got chametz. Uh-oh, what am I going to do? Passover is coming. Pesach is coming." And you could say a similar thing. You're sitting in yeshiva, Pesach is coming, and you start panicking. You have your stuff in chutz laretz, and it's in a machzan somewhere. It's in storage. No one has access to the storage. You have the keys here. The keys are lost, so you can't tell somebody, dispose of that box of Wheaties or whatever it may be. What do you do with that? What do you do with it? Or if you have in your dorm room, maybe it's a little different. Maybe you should just dispose of it, have a beer chametz party before Pesach and try to get rid of everything. So our scenario is there's a Jew and a non-Jew on a boat, and the Jew has chametz, hareze mochrul and nochri. He can sell it to the non-Jew, v'nosno b'matana, or he can give it as a bona fide gift to the non-Jew, no strings attached. V'chozer, right after the parentheses, v'chozer v'lokeach mimena la'achar Pesach, and he can repurchase it after Pesach, on the condition that it's a bona fide gift. What's a bona fide gift? No strings attached. That when the gift is given, the Jew says, here, this is yours. You can do whatever you want with it. There are no strings attached that I have a right to get it back after Pesach, and you owe it to me. And if it's lost, then you have to reimburse me for the costs of this chametz. Nothing like that. It's a gift. And that means the non-Jew can get it, and immediately upon receiving it, he can burn it, he can throw it out, he can eat it, he can do whatever he wants with it. And Yerushalmi, and this Tosefta also says as follows, where it's underlined in source number 2, Adsha, the Jew can say to the non-Jew, Adsha talokeach b'mana, you are going to purchase chametz for your needs before Pesach. You only need a small amount. You're about to go to the super stall and buy $100 worth of chametz. Why don't you also buy mine? I know you don't really need it, but buy my chametz also. Spend a little bit more. Spend $200. I know you're not going to use all of it in 7 days. I know you're going to go buy it from a non-Jew, whatever your needs are. Come and purchase it from me. Maybe I'll need it, and I'll repurchase it from you after Pesach. It's interesting language. Here the Jew is not making a commitment to repurchase it after Pesach, but he's saying, maybe I'll repurchase it after Pesach. So that is the makor in the Tosefta and the Yerushalmi for our Machiras Chametz. Coming up Pesach, we sell it to a non-Jew. What's typically done is we don't find the non-Jew ourselves. One of my daughters told me we have a non-Jew that lives upstairs that works for the U.S. government. She says, oh, you can just go sell everything to Martin. Right, so I can go knock on Martin's door and I can say, Martin, would you like to purchase our chametz? Passover's coming. Maybe I'll buy it back from you in 7 days, maybe not. And he's going to look at me, right? So what we typically do is we go to the Rav. I'm sure there's a Rav in Or Sameach that organizes this. And people will go and appoint him as their messenger, as their shaliach. We'll get into a little bit more detail on this a little bit later. Hopefully we'll have time. And that shaliach will go representing them and sell the chametz. So now we're going to dive into this issue. Is it proper to sell chametz, or is it preferred to actually not sell the chametz, just to get rid of it before Pesach? So a number of poskim say, some poskim say it's inappropriate to be selling your chametz. Why? Why is it inappropriate to sell your chametz? It's a bona fide sale.
It looks like a joke.
It looks like a joke. What does it look like? Why am I selling? To get it back, to avoid being over by Yeran, by Yitzmatzah, owning Chametz on Pesach. So we would call this a legal fiction. What's a fiction? We can define it in different ways. It's a loophole is a nice way to say it. We can say a loophole, and that's an appropriate way to say it, Ben. Or we can say
not true,
a fraud, right? So we have to look at, do the poskim view it as a loophole, that's a great word, thank you, a loophole, or fraud. And if we say it's simply a loophole, but it's a bona fide sale, bona fide gift, that's appropriate. But if we say it's a fraud, then this whole concept of selling my chametz in order to avoid an isser would be problematic. And not only that, would it be problematic, I would be over the isser by Yerah by Yematz, and after Pesach, I have a problem. That would be considered chametz sha'avar lafa Pesach. Meaning Chazal decreed that any chametz that was in your possession during Pesach, it has to be thrown out. You can't have benefit from afterwards. Chametz shava, you can't eat it. Sean.
Also, Rav, it seems that on the tzad that it shouldn't be kosher or whatever, is that you seem to just be protecting yourself from a chisor and kiss. Meaning, you don't want to lose your bottle of blue label. That's really what's driving you to want to sell it.
Right. So well, you want to keep it.
So really you want to keep it.
So Sean is asking good. When I'm selling it, what's my real intention? Am I thinking this is a real sale, or am I saying, you know, this is really a great way for me to hold on to possession? And although I'm going through the form of selling it to a non-Jew, but Tachlis is, he knows I'm going to buy it back. He wants me to buy it back. He doesn't want to come out of pocket for the entire amount. So effectively, in my mind, I don't have a gemiras das, an intention to really sell. And conversely, or similarly, the goy, same goy, Peter comes in every year, Rabbi, I'm here, it's the 13th, you know, 13th day of Nisan, 14th day, I'm here to buy it from you, right? Let's do the deal. I'll see you 3 minutes after Tzeisa Kol Chavim, right after Pesach. And so is the goy saying, I'm really buying this? Or is he saying, I'm assisting the Jew in making, I'm making a little bit profit on this also? So the Machatzis HaShekel says that. One of the commentaries on the Magen Avraham and the Shulchan Aruch, he says, this doesn't work. He says, the only time that we see that Mechiras Chametz works, as we saw in the Tosefta, is that a Jew is on a boat and he says, Oy Gevalt, I have Chametz, I need a way to get rid of it. So it happens to be on a one-off, 1 year, he needs an assistance in getting rid of the Chametz, so he's not over the Isser, let him do it. But the Machatzita Shekel says, Chas v'Shalom, that we should do it every year. If we're doing it every year, the Jew is not taking it seriously, and even if the Jew is taking it seriously, certainly the non-Jew is not taking the purchase seriously.
What's the difference if you're on a boat or on the boat? It's such a real issue, you could have just chucked it in the water.
It's good. So there, it's good. You could. Meaning, what the Tosefta is teaching us, based on this Machatzita Shekel, is not that you can never do it. But the boat is saying, it's a one-off. You happen to be on a boat this year, and you have extra chametz, so this is your way to get rid of it without having to throw it out. Fine, but not on an end, not back at your home that you meet the goy each and every year. So that's why it's lav dafka boat, but saying the Machatzita Shekel would say, it's an exceptional case. Yeah.
I thought the chametz in the boat case is not with him on the boat. He has it in his house.
It says chametz beyad.
It's there. He has it there.
Beyad.
He has it there. He has it on the boat.
That we said means that you own it somewhere else, not where you.
That was another example. Another example. Okay, so let's continue here. Nonetheless, many poskim say that although we may want to call this a sham, a fraud, nonetheless, because we are going through the form, and at that time we have a bona fide sale to the non-Jew, and I have a kinyan, I've gone through the appropriate legal process of selling this chametz to the non-Jew, that is kosher. So if you look at this bend of source number 7, two lines down from where it's underlined, at the end of the line, Shari, says the Beis Yosef, Shari litno legoy b'matana. It is permitted to give it to the non-Jew as a bona fide gift or a bona fide sale, he would also say. V'lachso v'lelokho achar Pesach, and go and repurchase it after Pesach. And he says, V'ein lecha harama gdola mizo, you don't have a loophole bigger than this. He doesn't say of sham. He says, you don't have a loophole bigger than this. V'afilu hache shari. Nonetheless, it is permitted to go and do the mechiras chametz, to sell the chametz. Why? Ma'acha shemotzio mirshuso legamre, because you are fully taking it out of your possession. Now, when the base Yosef says,
"Rama is a sham," it's not a.
It's both.
He says it's mutter.
So I'm defining it more as
Pashup Shad.
Because Pashup Shad is a fiction. Cleaner way is a fiction.
Harama typically
refers to sham. Here I would say a fiction. Here I would say because anyone, I think, you know, maybe I'm cruxing it a little, but if he's saying mutter, I don't think we can say it's a sham. So So the Chassam Sofer says, and I'm going to go a little bit quicker because we have a bunch of pages to cover here. The Chassam Sofer says, similar to the Beis Yosef, that even though this is a harama, it's a loophole, it's a sham, it's a fraud, nonetheless, it would be permitted. And he says at the end of source number 8, it's permitted me d'oraisa, not a problem. And end of source number 8, where it's underlined, v'afilu b'feirosh yachol omer lagoy, and it's even permitted to say explicitly to the non-Jew, im nishar biyatcha chametz ad achar ha-pesach. If you still have it after Pesach, in other words, you're allowed to do anything you want with it during Pesach, but if you still have it and you want to sell it back to me, I'm almost certainly going to repurchase it from you. Right? You can even say that. This isn't a tznai, it's not an absolute commitment, but it is, you're giving the goy some comfort that he's going to have a way out to selling this chametz. So it's actually a machlokis whether you can explicitly make a commitment to the non-Jew to repurchase afterward, and in addition, can you guarantee a return on the investment that the goy is making? In other words, the goy is going to buy it for 100. Can you tell him, I'm going to commit to repurchase from you after Pesach, and not only that, I'm going to repurchase it for 150. Is that permitted or is not permitted? Some Rishonim say it is permitted. Other Rishonim say it is not permitted. You can't guarantee to purchase it because that would be conditional. You can't guarantee a return to it, to the Gnanja. So that's a machlokas. What I want to get into now is what are some of the conditions when we're going to do, anyone who is going to sell, and I will say ideally don't sell, ideally get rid of the chametz, but if somebody fits into the requirements to enable him to sell the chametz. What are the requirements? What are the conditions? And what are the various things that we should do to make this a real bona fide sale, that we're not going to be over the isurim of Bal Yerah, Bal Yematzah owning chametz on Pesach? So in source number 14, the Truma Sedeshin, who was a very prominent Rishon, has the following shaila. Source number 14, page number 3. Mi shiyesh biyado chametz samuch lePesach. Somebody who has chametz in his hands next to Pesach, close to Pesach. Now it's close to Pesach, we've got chametz. Now is a good time to start eating away whatever you have, dwindle it down. Everyone with the family now, we're trying to dwindle down the fridge, the pantry. We're trying to get it lower and lower, but you're never going to get rid of everything come Pesach, but you try to limit what you have left. So he says as follows, Mi sheyesh biyado chametz samuch lePesach. Somebody who has in his hands, his possession, chametz close to Pesach, v'kasha alav levaram, and it's difficult for him to get rid of it. And we could say either there's so much of it, or it'd be a serious financial loss. V'rotze letitam lenochri chutz lebayit. And he wants to give it to a non-Jew outside of the house. B'matana gemura. And he wants to give a bona fide gift for oso nochri. And that non-Jew, HaYisrael Makiro, the Jew knows him, he recognizes him, he knows his personality. He knows that this non-Jew is not going to touch the chametz at all. That this non-Jew is simply going to hold on to the goods, to the chametz, until after Pesach. The yachzor v'yitnelo, and he's going to give it back after Pesach. So the question to the Truma Sedeshin was, Shari kai gav no lav. Is it permitted to do this? It's a bona fide gift, but you know that Peter here, who's the recipient of the gift, is not going to touch it. Comes the end of Pesach, he's going to knock on your door a couple minutes after Tzeisach Chachavim and says, listen, I have a gift. Thank you, I decided to not keep it. Here's your chametz back. Is this permitted? So the Truma Sedeshin answers back, it is permitted. Yira Deshari, it is permitted. Just make sure it's a bona fide gift. He would say, just make sure it's a bona fide sale. Now, if we look at the beginning of the Shaila, the question was, is it permitted to give it to a non-Jew chutz labayit? What is chutz labayit?
Outside the house.
What, now, outside the house, what's outside the house? Are we saying, is it permitted to give it to a non-Jew as long as you take the chametz outside of your house? Or we could read this a different way. A nochri chutz labayis.
Doesn't live in your house.
Who does it? The nochri does it. What's your name?
Jared.
Jared. The nochri doesn't. You have to give it to someone who doesn't live in your house. You can't keep it. You can't. If it can stay in your house, in other words, but the person buying it can't be in your house. Why? Because they won't do an appropriate meshicha to be koneh. Won't do an appropriate kinyan to be koneh. So we have a fundamental question here. What is this chutz labayis? And he repeats the same language in another tshuva. So the Beis Yosef says that the requirement is that when you sell your chametz, if you're going to sell the chametz, you have to sell it to someone who doesn't live in your house. In other words, it can stay in your house, but don't sell it to someone who works in your house, who lives in your house. Most of the poskim disagree with that. And they say when the Truma Sedeshin was saying nochri chutz labayis, most poskim say that the chametz has to be removed from your house. In other words, you have chametz in the dorm. When you sell, most poskim would say, when you sell, you got to get the chametz out of your possession. Deliver it to the non-Jew, but keeping it in your possession, that's going too far. That's a sham. That's not a loophole, that goes to being a sham. You're telling me you're entering a purchase contract. You sold it to non-Jew, but it's sitting right there in your possession still. Quick question, Anna.
What was the thing you're saying about trying to dwindle down your supply of chametz? If you know you're going to end up selling every year anyway, why try and dwindle down? You're either selling
just a good practice to do, but legally it wouldn't matter because you're going to sell anyway. It's more of a let me get rid of as much as I can nonetheless. So b'nei nachinami, you happen to be, I'm going to sell anyway. If I'm going to sell anyway, so I sell a little, sell a lot. Okay, so let's continue. So most poskim say that you have to get rid of that chametz. So nonetheless, the poskim say, and the Machatzitza Shekel comes and says that if it's impossible or very difficult for you to get rid of all that chametz, then it would be permitted to keep the chametz inside one's house. If you're able to get rid of it, and I think we would say for the most part, if you're in a dorm, you don't have a large family, right? You should try not to sell your chametz, get rid of it. That is the ideal. And if you have large financial loss, or if it's very difficult because you do have a whole pantry full, unless it's really difficult to get it out of the possession, the poskim would say, ideally get it out of your possession. I don't think that people are machbit about this for the most part.
In Eretz Yisrael, a lot of people don't sell homes.
Okay, so not selling, but if they do sell,
yeah.
I don't know people who are machbit to sell but get it out of their possessions.
Yeah,
if they do sell, they typically sit. But the poskim would say, ideally, even if you're going to sell, firstly, best not to sell. But if you're going to sell, get it out of your possession. If it's very difficult to get it out of your possession, keep it in your possession. But we have four requirements. So let's go right now through what the four requirements are. So if you turn to page number four. Requirement number one, which we mentioned before, is when you sell to the non-Jew, ideally give it to him, get it out of your possession, but if not, he needs to have access to it. So in other words, how do you give access to the non-Jew? Hand over the key. So if you look in source number 22, the Magen Avraham says as follows, Keshem kasa b'shem abach, he quotes the Bach, Shim yesh lo chametz harbe, if you have a lot of chametz, v'ef shar lehotzia chutz lebayis, and it is difficult for you to take it out of the house, Yimkor lo gam hacheder, you should also, we're going to get to this in a second, you should also sell the room. We'll get back to that. Vitzarech limtzor lo hamafteach, that you are obligated to give over the key to the non-Jew that purchased. Yachol lichno sham, that he can access the chametz at any time. Dim lochein hevilek harama ba'alma. If not, this is a sham. It's a sham. You're telling me you sold it, but you still didn't even give him access to it? So in order to follow through, to show it's not a sham, it's a loophole and permitted, you have to hand over the key. And interestingly, the poskim say, based on this Bach, that if you didn't go give the key, you didn't do a mechira. That food has to be thrown out after Pesach, because it's chametz she'avar lav haPesach. There was never a sale. It has to be thrown out, you can't eat it after Pesach. But the Magen Avraham brings a second opinion and says, "Ach hevi shita acheres baze demashma midvarav dafilu lo masar lo amavtech." Even if you didn't go give over the key, shari b'di'evid, that it's permitted b'di'evid. Even according to the second opinion, you still have to give the key lechatchila. But if you didn't give the key, you didn't give access. Okay, it's not the worst thing. Now the Beher Heitev says, "Lemaisa, we can be lenient on this." Meaning, if you didn't give the key over, who still owns the chametz? Right, you entered into a purchase agreement, you sold the chametz, who owns it? The non-Jew owns it, right? So if he would sue you in court, who would win? Sues for possession. The non-Jew would win. So the fact that I didn't give over the key does not mean that there was no sale. There was a sale. I played games on the sale that I shouldn't have. I didn't give him a key, but despite the fact there was still a bona fide sale, and the Be'er Heitev would say, you're not over the Isra Bal Yeram Bal Yematz of ownership of Chametz over Pesach. Shall let me just get through some of the points. Giving the key would not prevent a bona fide sale. Now the Orach HaShulchan in source number 23 says a number of important things. The first one I don't fully understand. He says where it's underlined, Ata Efshar Zebeshum Panim Kiyadu. And nowadays we know that it is impossible to give over the keys to the non-Jew as is known. Doesn't explain why. It could be that
to Maisa today, where a rov is a shliach for 1,000 people.
But I don't think that's what he was getting at. I don't think that's what he's getting at. What? I don't know. You know, are they going to play with the chametz? Are they going to do this? You know what? They have a right to do it.
Sure.
So I don't really understand the first point of the Aruch HaShulchan. Ki yadua, we can't give them. The second point of the Aruch HaShulchan is that there are government legislation that if you have alcohol, you can't give other people access to it. It could be that he's talking about people who earn their parnasa from alcohol here. So you're not permitted to give other people access. I know New York has a similar law that if somebody buys alcohol, it's prohibited to the store to take it back. There are no refunds on alcohol. So I think maybe that is the second point in the Aruch HaShulchan. He says also, the only problem of not giving a key if somebody's trying to prevent a sale. You're really trying to hassle the non-Jew into having access, but if that's not your intention, he says it's not a problem. So if he brings various reasons why the non-giving of the key would not prevent the sale, he says what you can do is simply tell the non-Jew the key is in this location. Come and get it if you want access, but keep the location close to you so you can have a little bit control. I believe that the hanhaga, this is what I've done before when selling my chametz, is when I've gone out of town, either you're there, and then you don't have to leave the key because you're there, you're living in the location, so why give a key? Just come, Peter, come knock on the door if you want it. Come and get the chametz. Now, I will tell you, people say, I would be so upset if the non-Jew came to collect the chametz. That's the wrong intention. The intention should be, when doing mechiras chametz, if Peter comes and knocks on the door, that will be the best day of my life, because I'm going to be excited to be mekayim the mitzvah and to show that I absolutely had the intention of selling this chametz. And I've even had the thought of finding the Peters in the world and going and telling him, go knock on everyone's door, to show them that they need to take this mechira seriously. Knock on the door and say, I'm taking my goods. To impress upon them that this is an absolute sale, and during Pesach, Peter owns the chametz, and you need to give him access, and you need to give him over the chametz. So that should really be our intentions when selling. If Peter comes, give him a shalom aleichem, Peter, your chametz is over there, go ahead, help yourself whatever you want, and we'll have a cheshbon, how much you owe me after Pesach. So let's continue. Condition number one is to give access. Either you're there, or leave a key by a neighbor, leave a key with the non-Jew. Condition number two, the poskim say, is that it's not sufficient to sell the chametz itself, but you actually, because it's staying in your possession, you also have to sell or rent the area that the chametz is on. And the poskim disagree, which is better? Is it better to sell it, or is it better to rent it? Better to sell. Some say it's better to sell because a rental is not sufficient. That is not a strong enough sale to the non-Jew. Some say that you should rent but not sell, because if you try to sell, the goy is obviously not going to take it very seriously that you're selling him the cabinets that are marked chametz in your kitchen. He's going to say, you're selling me your cabinets? So they say it's much better to rent the area than to sell area, because the goy will take it more seriously. If you look in source number 27, the Igros Moshe points out that if you are appointing a rav to sell for you your chametz for you, not only do you appoint him to sell your chametz, but also you have to appoint him to act in your, as your agent in either renting out or selling the area that the chametz is on. It's not enough. You need to do kinyanim on both. You need to sell the chametz, and you also need to rent or sell the area that the chametz is on. That's, he points out. Yoko has another interesting point. He says that if you're selling to the goy, and you obviously have to give him the area, sell or rent him the area that it's on, you also have to give him access to get to that area. So the contract should also say not only that I'm selling you the chametz and I'm renting or leasing the area that the chametz is on, but you also have the right to get from my front door or my back door to get the chametz when you want to access it. So he says that's another important point. And I've had this shaila. He says another thing. He says, if you leave things that you may need during Pesach in the area that you're leaving cordoned off, designated for the chametz, you need a right for yourself in the contract to access that. Meaning, I've sold the room. You know, we're away, we're designating a certain room for chametz. I've sold that room, I've rented that room. If I didn't write in the contract that I have a right to access that room, that's his room, I don't have a right to access it. So Rav Moshe says, be careful when you're renting or giving away, so we're renting or selling that area that the chametz is on, if you're going to need to access it, be sure that you write that in the contract. So far we have two conditions. Condition number one is giving access, giving the key. And also not only selling the chametz. This is what we're talking about, is if you're leaving the chametz in your possession, we have four requirements. Requirement number one is give the key, give access. Requirement number two is not only selling the chametz, but also leasing, renting, or selling the area that the chametz is on. Requirement number three is listing out what chametz is being sold. Meaning what? If I go to Jared, and I say, Jared, I've got a bag here, and I've got some stuff in it. You want to buy it? The price is $5. So Jared has no clue what's in the bag. So if Jared says, yeah, I'll take a gamble on it, you know, I think that the value is going to be more than $5. Is that a sale or is that not a sale?
He took the chance.
But what's that called in halacha? Gambling. Mesachek bekubya. And in halacha, gambling is not a purchase. There's no contract there. So unless you specify what's in this bag, and it doesn't have to be so specific, and we're not going to go into the details of, do you have to know how much, or what's in there, or the quality. It doesn't need that much detail. If I say there's wood in this bag, that's sufficient. I don't say how much it is, what quality, but there's wood, you know, that would be sufficient. So if I go to a non-Jew and say, I'm going to sell you my chametz, and he says, what's chametz? Chametz is leavened bread, leavened stuff, whatever it is. Is that specific enough that there would be a contract if he commits, without it having any additional information? Or is that too vague that we would say that is a gambling by the non-Jew and committing to the purchase without really specifying enough information? So this is actually...
A non-Jew is also not allowed to gamble.
Well, we don't have a contract is the issue here. That's neither here nor there that he has an isser. Means that he really didn't enter into a purchase with me if this is a gambling situation. So the poskim say, source number 30, the Makor Chaim says as follows, Kishemocher chametz yeforish kol minu min shemocher. You need a line item, every type of chametz you're selling. Dim lochein hevi kedavar she'enu mesuyim delokana. If you don't line item saying I'm selling you liquor, I'm selling you macaroni. By the way, many have the minhag to not sell chametz gomor, pure chametz, but we'll leave that aside for now. I'm going to sell you my medicines. I'm going to sell you the chametz that is included in my pots. I'm not going to sell my pots themselves because then I have to tovel them if I repurchase it. You know, whatever it is, I have to line item. It's an important point. Don't make that mistake. I have to line item what am I selling. And if I don't line item the categories, I don't have to say I have a box and a half of Wheaties. I don't have to say that and 3.5 boxes of Cheerios. I don't have to say that. I have Cheerios, I have Wheaties, I have this. You have to give in specifics. My father-in-law is very makbid on this. He has it on a computer program. And every year he updates it for the types of chametz and the locations of the chametz. And he prints it out and he attaches it to the contract that he signs with the rav of his shul when he sells the chametz. So one has to give the specifics. Now, Lamaisa, some poskim are makel on this. Why can you be makel on this? They say that it's sufficient, it's specific enough that I tell them I'm selling my chametz. Because if you know I'm selling my chametz, that'd be like selling the wood in the bag, that they know it's the specific enough category of items that I'm selling. So some poskim say, you know, lechatchila, line item, give the information, give the detail, but if you didn't, it's okay. Other poskim say, it doesn't matter. Why? Because how do you put a value on the chametz? How do we set the price? Is it a price set up front with the goy or not? So they say the way the mechanism setting the price with the goy is that if the goy wants to, he gives a down payment, and if he wants to purchase, we get a valuation of the price of the cost that it will be to the non-Jew. So it doesn't matter if I have gold in this paper bag, or if I have wood, because he's going to pay fair value, and he knows at the end of the day, we're going to have a valuation to set the price. So, and if that's the case, this is not gambling, that he's saying I'm committing to $5 and hopefully I'll win the lottery and it's gold in there and it's not charcoal or whatever it is. But we're going to set a value based on a valuation, so there's no gambling here. So some postgame are lenient because of that you don't have to line item everything. Rav Moshe says something interesting. He says, you have to distinguish. If this is a one-off, one person is selling his chametz to a non-Jew, then you have to be very careful to line item everything. Why? Because the non-Jew doesn't know what he's getting. It could be that this person has quality chametz, he's getting good stuff, or it could be that he's just selling him rotten bread and he's getting a bad deal. But if you have a lot of people selling their chametz together, as we do nowadays, the non-Jew is purchasing. It says, I know that Ben and Sean, they may have bad chametz, but it could be that Rabbi Wiener is a connoisseur of liqueurs, and I'm getting great stuff also. So because everyone will balance each other's out, he knows that he's going to get a whole bundle of good chametz and bad chametz, so that would be specific enough to concretize the contract. So that is... Say again?
A couple hundred years ago, they adapted to not itemize. It's a relatively new thing to itemize.
And even then, when they sold one-on-one? I mean, they only sold one-on-one back then.
Even if they did, because the reason was, it was at one time where they itemized, so what happened was a guy realized that he bought a liquor factory.
Mm.
So when he realized he bought a liquor factory, he brought all his friends, and they went in there, and they drank up all the liquor. Then afterwards, they had to pay for it.
Right, and they didn't have the money for it. So,
rabbanim made by many rabbanim, but dafka, not to write down what it is.
So there we would rely on the shita that because it's specified as chametz, that would be sufficient.
Yeah.
Then it would be sufficient.
If it was a real sale and the goy really didn't buy the chametz, then why would he have to pay for it after he uses it?
No, if he used it, he bought it.
Yeah.
So he has to pay for it.
He bought it in the first place.
He bought it in the first place, but he... Oh, so it's a different... Here, we're going to get into the payment mechanism in a little bit if we can get to it. So three conditions so far. If you're keeping it in your possession, condition number one is key. Condition number two... The key is access. Number two is renting or renting or leasing the area or selling the area. Also, number three is
you have access to the
lechatchila specify. That's part of number two. Lechatchila specify what you're selling. And number three is that you actually have to build a mechitza around it. Source number 36 says as follows: This is Gemara Pesachim. Amar Rav Yehuda. Amar Rav, where it's underlined, it says Rav Yehuda in the name of Rav Hamotze Chametz Bebeisu Beyom Tov. If somebody does find chametz in his house on Yontif, Kofe alav et hakli. You should cover it with a kli. It's mukza, and then after Pesach, you have to dispose of it, burn it, for example. This has happened in a number of times. It's a famous shaylet. I know it's happened to me in Chutz Laaretz, not so much in Eretz Yisrael. That is Pesach is the time that Kellogg's decides to send you the little sample of cereal along with your newspaper, and it arrives on Yontif. It's happened at least twice that I remember. And the Rav gets up and tells you, "What do you do if the newspaper arrived with chametz?" So you should put a kli on top of it. It's muksa, assuming that it's in your house. It's out of your house. Leave it. Don't be konet. Anyantif. Anyantif, because it's muksa.
You can't burn it.
And you can't burn it. You can't do anything with it, so leave it. But continue. Where it's underlined. V'amar Rav Yehuda amar Rav, chemtso shel nochri osa l'mechitza asara tfachim mishumekar. If you have chametz of a non-Jew in your possession, you should make a mechitza around it of 10 tfachim. A real mechitza. What does a mechitza do? What does that help? So it's a machlokis. Rashi says the purpose of the mechitza is a heker, so I can recognize and be reminded that I can't eat that chametz. So the Menashe Klein as a shayli says people use medicine cabinets and they simply close up their medicine cabinets with chametz in it. They stick a piece of tape, they write chametz on it. He says that's not sufficient because you need a real mechitza of 10 tfachim all around it. So he wants to bring different. Say louder.
A mechitza is a reshus.
So Rabbeinu Hananel says that. He says the concept of a mechitza of 10 is that you have to put it in a different reshus, and that's what's giving ownership to the non-Jew. So here we have a good nafkamina between why do I have this mechitza? Based on Rashi, it's simply to remind me that I can't eat it. Based on Rabbi Yaffe and Rabbeinu Hananel, it's a separate reshus. So mina ga'olam is people, they don't build these big... separate reshus around their chametz. They simply leave it in a cabinet or something and they stick it, they tie it down. You know, they simply say chametz, put a piece of tape on it, tie around it. So that is the minhag olam, not to have a separate full reshus and to have it in a big container that's 10 by 10 or whatever, 10 all around it. So he says people are lenient and we're lenient based on Rashi's explanation. Why do I have to have a 10 by 10? Rashi's explanation is to remind me. So even if I don't have it, a 10 tfachi mechitz around it, as long as it acts as a heker, I label it, I close it, I seal it, that's going to be enough for me to remember that I can't eat that chametz, that would be sufficient. So here we have condition number four, is to have a designated area, seal it off, have a mechitza, whatever it is, for that chametz. So let's continue quickly. We have two more minutes, so what should I hit on? Okay, let's. Does the non-Jewish the last day? Interesting question. Does the goy have to pay the whole amount? So what's typically done is the goy does not pay the whole amount, pays a down payment, and the rest is paid if he wants to exercise his right to purchase it all. So some poskim ask on that. There's a gemara that infers that if you pay a down payment, you've only purchased that amount that you put the down payment on. In other words, if you've paid $100 out of $1,000, you've only purchased 10% of the chametz. So there's no real sale on the other 90% of it. Lemaisa poskim are lenient on that. They said this is simply a sign when he sells that he's serious about it. In other words, that payment is for the full amount, but it's simply that he's going to pay the balance later. So it's effectively that he's paid the full amount. So that's number one. That's miktas kesef koni, even a small amount. That is the kinyan. There are other poskim that explain that effectively what's happening is that you're being paid the whole amount, but you're giving back the other 90% or whatever it is as a loan to the non-Jew. And it happens to be in the contracts, when you sign the contract, the Rav signs the contract with the non-Jew, it says, I've received full payment, but I'm giving the balance of whatever wasn't physically paid to you as a loan. So, apialacha, there's been a full payment and simply a loan back to the non-Jew that he would have to pay if he actually takes possession and uses the chametz. Last point is, nowadays we don't, as I mentioned, we don't sell one by one. We don't find our Martins of the world, our Peters of the world, and sell to them. We do what's called a mechira koleles. Everyone hires a rav, and the rav goes and sells the chametz. The minhag is that you pay the rav something, whatever it is, whatever one can afford, a little bit, a lot, whatever it is. And the poskim give a nice halachic explanation why to do this. There's a concept of a chazaka, shaliach oseh shlichuso. There's a chazaka, you can assume that if you designate a shaliach to do something for you, if you tell a shaliach, go marry this woman for you, under certain circumstances, you can assume he did his shlichus. But poskim say that you can't assume that if it's a deraisa that he's doing for you. And here, when you appoint the rav, you are appointing him to get you out of being over the Isser Doraisa Bal Yiram Bal Yimatzah. So how can you assume that he actually did what you appointed him to do? So the poskim say, if I give him something for it, if I pay him, he is no longer a shaliach, but he's a poel, he's a worker of mine, and then you can rely, even if he doesn't report to you back before Pesach, I did it, I sold it, because he was paid something, even a couple shekel, you can rely that he's going to go through and adhere to his requirements. Let me recap, and then maybe we can have a couple questions. Ideally, use up the chametz. Ideally, don't sell it. But if you have a lot, if it would be a financial loss, one can sell the chametz. If one does sell the chametz, ideally out of your possession. If it's too difficult to do that, it can be kept in one's possession, but you have to sell it to the rav with four requirements. The four requirements are, number one, key. Give access to the non-Jew. Number two, rent out or sell out the area also, not on the chametz. Number three, give a list of what you're selling ideally. And number four, mechitza, have a designated area. Now, it's interesting. You can actually go online. I saw a couple places that do it online. Hire a rav to sell your chametz online. Torah.org has that. Chabad.org has that. And it was interesting reading their contracts when you're hiring them. At least I saw Torah.org. They did not ask you to line item. There you're also not giving the key to the person, at least you give access. So you should try to do this in the most appropriate and kosher way that you can when you do sell your chametz. We have Rabbi Wiener, we have a couple questions.
Well, just to know, I think right, you can do it through Rabbi Wiener, Moshe Wiener here, and also Rabbi Eisenstein.
Okay, I'll take a couple questions.
What happens afterwards? Does the guy give the payment back?
It's a good question. No, they typically will earn some sort of profit, so you'll pay the guy to repurchase it. Typically, the assumption is, and I was never comfortable with this assumption, that you assume the rub was successful in buying it back. I was never very comfortable with that. But what was announced in shul when I was in shul is, and you should ask the rav who's selling it, he'd say, I'll contact you if I'm not successful. Otherwise, assume that it's about done by 10 p.m. or whatever time it is. So ask the rav, will you let us know that you've sold it? Or if not, what time do you assume it'll be purchased that I can start using that chametz afterward?
If the guy who's purchasing it is not very fluent in English, like the Asian or whatever, does it make a difference that they don't really read the contract properly?
They have to understand what's going on. They absolutely have to understand. They should be explained it. They have to know. They have to know that there's a gemurist, a meeting of the minds on the sale.
When you're renting out the area, do you have to ask about the area?
I had that shaila. Such a good shaila. What if I have a lease that says I am not permitted to sell or sublicense this property? I asked that shaila, because when I leased in Los Angeles, I had that shaila, and the poskim weren't that concerned, especially if you're leasing it out a sublease for this purpose. They weren't that concerned about it. So that's a very good question.
Yeah.
That's why we have an appraisal. To make it a real sale. So
is
we
it
do.
A real sale?
It absolutely is, with an appraisal that if he wants it, it has to be paid at basically $1,000.
Rob, what if you're leaving your comment?
You better leave that. Then you sell the whole thing?
What about when you have comments?
It depends when you leave. Typically, we do a bedikah even if you leave, yeah. It's just not with a bracha or not a bracha. Depends when you leave. Depends when. If you're there, the night. I'm saying the night before. Yeah, but if. But if you leave the day,
you leave today without a bracha.
Before, no, the day before. If you leave the day of Pesach.
You're done with it.
Yeah, do you say bracha?
Well, you're done, of course.
So you do, so that's a, yeah. That's when you leave.
Yeah. If you own McDonald's stock, do you own Chometz?
Oh, very good.
If you, know where?
If you own McDonald's stock, so many posting, some post from Machmir. Some post-game are makel because you don't have control. So they look at control. Do you have control over McDonald's because you own shares? So because you don't have any control of it, they're makel on it. But if you have a control...
A reminder, tonight the plaques
in
are changed,
then you have to sell
and therefore starting from tomorrow, the earliest for Mincha is 1:14. So Mincha will be later next week. We're having a sports thing next week. Rain permitting, weather permitting.
Really? I was wondering if you wanted to talk to you about I wasn't planning on needing much more place in Lacha in the near future, but that the plans have changed. I was wondering if there was
there's a topic. There are certain firms talk about interest, Rivas, talk about.